Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Deliberate. This is your Agile Product Owners Podcast. My name is Corey Bryan, and this week we're doing things a little differently. I was supposed to be traveling this week. I ended up not traveling this week because the weather gods in New York were not kind to me or to any airline that would get me to any of the three New York airports. So not so much with the traveling this week. So I'm trying another setup, trying to minimize things. And that's pretty much a theme I've noticed over the last couple weeks is I'm trying to minimize things. I'm trying to minimize meetings, number of meetings, the length of meetings. So if there's a 30-minute meeting, I want to see if I can get it done in 15 minutes. I'm minimizing my podcast setup. So I'm taking away things that I used to rely on to try to make the setup easier to do or easier to record or manage or anything like that. So a lot of minimalization is going on in my business life, my personal life, everything else. So I hope you're making some successes in that as well with getting rid of distractions. I had a good couple of articles that I read. One was by a friend that I've worked with for a while, Michelle Pock. She had a guest blog post on Bobsite called Finding Your Rhythm as a Product Owner. A really good article that she wrote. She wrote it internally for our company, and then Bob found it and shared it. She writes about organization, basically, your daily organization as a product owner, around the ceremony. So around sprint planning activities, backlog refinement, sprint review, things you need to do to get ready for those meetings, things you need to do to have ready for those meetings, discussions you want to have. And then after those meetings occur, what do you need to be able to do or take away from that to get ready for the next ceremony or the next sprint planning meeting and so on. So it's a really good article she has. One of the great lines I saw in it was she has a quote, or she says, carve out time for thinking, reading, and daydreaming in your schedule and respect your team's need to do the same. Very key point there, I think. Make sure, as Bob told me the other day, make sure you get out and think. I've been doing that a lot, actually reserving time to work, reserving time to think. And not only you need that, but your team needs to be able to do that too. So give them time, give them space to do that, and make sure they are doing it. If you give them time, make sure other people are giving them time and space to do that as well. And while I was on vacation, I managed to finish Resonate, which is a great book by Nancy Duarte, who is talking about presentations as visual stories or storytelling when you're presenting something. I thought it was useful for product owners because we are presenting a lot. We are talking a lot. And part of the way that we need to talk is in stories, not just user stories. But when we're telling about team successes or we're talking about users or we're talking about other things, it helps to talk in the form of stories. And she's got a really good idea about how to present those stories. Of course, there's a beginning, middle, and end. She goes through some details about how to structure that. She goes through the hero's journey and a couple other typical story structures, narrative structures that you see, and what you can actually do with those types of structures. But the interesting thing she has is something called a sparkline. Basically, it's a format for how your presentations can be best seen as a storytelling vehicle. Basically, you alternate between what is and what could be. And you end with kind of the new norm, or what she calls the new bliss, which is your call to action of, here's where I'm asking you to go out and do something. Now that I've shown you things that are and things that could be and how we actually get there, now I'm actually asking you to go out and help me do that. Lots of different ways that product owners could use that type of format. It's something that I'm looking at presentations that I'm doing now outside of sprint demos to actually, and sprint demos a little bit as well, to say, how can I better structure these as a story? Something I'm big on with demos themselves, something I'm big on with user stories is, again, here's what we have, here's what we want to have, here's why, and here's how you can help us, and how you can variate between those two. But Nancy's got a lot of good examples. She looks over some famous speeches, presentations, other things, and charts them out on those spark lines so you can see how they actually flow from one to the other. So a really good article. or I'm sorry, really good book that Nancy has that I would recommend you go and read. And it's very easy to read as well. It's one of the better reads I've had. It's weird how I noticed some things like most books, you know, your words and your sentences go across pages and they're not structured. They look like they were just a wall of text that got printed out. This is actually it's very visually, presented very visually well, where words don't run over pages or sentences don't run over pages or paragraphs don't run over pages, where you have a complete thought on a page. It's weird how rare that is, but I did notice that and it was something that was very cool that I liked a lot and, wanted to share that. Okay, so today is going to be an interesting topic. This is one of the topics that Kim had on her backlog when she was helping with this show. And it's something that at first I said, I don't think that's a good topic to do because it's not something that I think we should talk about doing in a positive sense. But after seeing and talking to some people, it is something that I think that there are people out there who are doing it because they have to. And it's something that I think that they need help in that type of situation. So it's basically you're a product owner and you're doing something else. So you have multiple roles that you're filling on your team and your organization or whatever else it is. But you're multitasking with different roles, either Scrum roles or company roles. So that's what we're going to talk about, being a product owner and something else. So the first rule is, and I want to make this very clear, the best case is no, don't do this. You should not be a product owner and. If you have to be, that's different and that's the talk of this, but if you can do the product owner role and that's it, that's the best case scenario. So let's be clear of that up front. But if you have to, let's talk about some things, some tips, some tricks, some tactics, some things you want to be aware of when you're having to do multiple roles. So the first bit of advice that I have is to make sure that you know which role you are currently in. You may be in the product owner role and the QA manager role, which I've done. You may be in the product owner role and the Scrum Master role. Also done that. You may be in the product owner role and the product manager role. Interesting combination, but you could be both of those people at the same time or multiples. I had actually my current position I'm in, I was doing four different roles. Other times I've done two, three. So I've done multiple roles. So there are some tricks and some tips, like I said, you can do. Really, the best one that you can do is to only be in one role at a time and to make sure you know which role that is. So if you're in the product owner role and you're acting as the product owner, act as just the product owner. The other roles that you have, don't think about them. Only act as the product owner. And it helps to actually say, as the product owner, I think this. Or as the test manager, I'm going to say this. So that the team knows and so that you know, more importantly, which conversation you're trying to have, which role you're trying to fill when you're doing that type of thing. It is a lot about wearing different hats. And if you need to actually get different hats to put on to do that, then please do. If you want a cowboy hat for when you're the product owner or you want a sombrero when you're the test manager, then get the different hats. The team may think it's silly at first. You may think it's silly at first, but it helps set the stage that I am serving different roles. I have different opinions about different things. And when I'm wearing this hat or when I say I'm the product owner, then I'm actually looking at it from that perspective. And really what that allows you to do is allows you to be in conflict with yourself. One of the reasons the roles are separate and the roles are separated, and it's a good reason, and one of the main reasons is so that there is conflict, there is tension between the roles that needs to exist for team health, for product health, to make sure that everybody is balancing things against each other. One is not winning against the other. The product is not winning against the team. The velocity is not winning against quality. Those types of balances need to be happening with the different roles. And when you're playing one or multiple roles, you have to be able to be in conflict with yourself. That's why it's helpful to say, as the product owner, I want to get more stuff done. As the Scrum Master, if you're doing that, those two roles, you have to say, I'm also interested in making sure the team is getting good quality software out the door. So you can look at both of those, and you can actually see where you're in conflict with yourself. And you should find some conflict with yourself where you can actually point that out with a group, with another person, with another coach, product owner, somebody who can help you see those conflicts and help you kind of write those down so you can say, I see in this role I want this, and in this role I want this, and I see how those conflict, and I see how I can actually resolve that. I think one of the other things that's important when you're in multiple roles is I think you need to decide less. One tip is when you're deciding things, let the team decide a lot of more things. Delegate those decisions more because, again, you want that conflict. You want that healthy tension. You want to not be driving as much things as a product owner. And if I'm the product owner and I'm also being the test manager or the scrum master, I'm going to ask the team to do more. I'm going to ask the team to do more on making testing decisions. They should be doing a lot of decisions anyway because they're part of an agile team. So I'm going to let them decide more because I want to make sure that I don't take over multiple roles and do too much. So I'm going to ask them to help, ask them to do some things with me so that I don't have to focus as much energy on those things. And really because one of the things I've learned is I'm going to half-ass something. So if I've got multiple roles, if I've got more than one role, I'm going to let one of those roles down. So which one am I going to let down? It's very often when I've been the product owner and the test manager effort suffers. The test management suffers because I'm spending more time on product ownership. So I ask testers, I asked other people to help me with the test management responsibilities so that I could still do that role if there was something serious that needed to be done, but the majority of the role was being done by the people that were helping. So they helped me do the test management role, making some of the decisions the test manager would make. I let them make so that I could focus on the product ownership role. And if there's another thing that I could kind of suggest is when you have to do multiple roles, see if you can do them for different teams. So you have to be the product owner, scrum master. If you have two teams, can you be the product owner for one team and the scrum master for another team? So if you have multiple teams and you can do different roles for different teams, I highly suggest you do different roles for different teams. But again, for me and for what I tried to do, the product owner role has always come first. The other roles have always come second, third, and then fourth. So I know there's going to be some role that gets left behind, and I'm going to do that role the worst. And I've made up my mind which role that's going to be. But it's different for every situation, for every product, and every instance of things. But I know that I'm going to focus on certain areas, and I'm not going to focus on other areas. But again, there's some instances where, depending on the team size, that's what you have to be, right? There were some good examples I was looking at in my research where there was a team of three. And, you know, there was a developer, a tester, and somebody else who had to do all the other roles, product owner, scrum master, product manager, salesperson. They were doing a lot of different roles. Sometimes that person is, you know, the CEO of the company or the VP of product. So they've got other responsibilities as well. So depending on your situation, you may have to do it as multiple roles, or you may be in a situation where the company just doesn't believe there's enough justification or there's enough benefit into having multiple roles. And in that situation, work to make them understand that this is a full-time job and scrum mastering is a full-time job and people management is a full-time job. And you cannot combine all those into one super person and expect them to be able to do each of those roles really well. Something's going to suck, and you get to pick which one that's going to be. So like I said, try as much as you can to get out of multiple roles. If you're doing the product owner and scrum master, maybe you could have somebody on the team act as a scrum master. Yes, that's going to cut their productivity or their ability to do development tasks. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's not a good thing, but it's something you try. Maybe you're doing the product manager and the team management roles. Maybe that's something you can say, hey, is there anybody else that can manage this team? One of the conversations I've been having lately is just because you're on the team doesn't mean you have to manage that team. You can manage other people because, again, explaining the role of an agile manager to somebody who's a dev manager or a test manager, it's really about career advancement and mentoring and, you know, bringing people onto the team and managing their career with them. It's not about giving them tasks about what to do. So if there's another person that can manage the team members instead of you, that's a good thing to look at as well. The project manager role, sometimes that can be activities that go that the product owner does. Sometimes it's activities that a scrum master could do. Again, is there somebody else that could do some of those parts of the role so that you can focus on product ownership? There's some questions about whether you should rotate the role. I'll be the product owner for this month and you be the product owner for next month. That's not great because I don't think you get a lot of consistency doing it that way, but it is another option where you could say, you know, our product owner and scrum masters are going to swap. Or at that point, really, why wouldn't you just make one the product owner and one the scrum master? Sometimes you have to do it for the short term, but it shouldn't be common. It should be, okay, we know for the next 2 months, I'm going to be the product owner and scrum master. Again, when I started my current role and I had four roles that I was filling, I knew in about a month or so, I would get rid of the one of the roles, and in about 2 months, I'd get rid of the other role. Then I'd still have two, and I'm doing two now, which I've found a way to do those, even though I have one primary and one secondary. But the other two roles I've been able to plan about, the one I'm going to get rid of those, and they were short-term fixes, short-term problems, short-term fixes. And then one of the things I keep hearing about is there's not enough to do in role X. So you can be the product owner and the scrum master because, you know, the scrum masters don't have a lot to do. Maybe that's true in certain places, but I've never worked at a place where the scrum master or team managers or product owners didn't have enough to do that they could just pick up another role, especially if it's a different role. Now, we've talked before about having a product owner stretch for two teams or multiple teams. And that's a possibility, again, if there's something where it's the same area that they're working in or the same product, but I wouldn't do something like that where it was different products or different areas of the product. I think one of the areas where product owners, when they're multitasking and doing different roles, can fall into traps is if, and I've seen before where somebody's been the product owner and the development manager is the most of the conversations from that person are around the how of things. If you're doing the product owner and anything else, get out of how, especially if you're in a management type role. Let the team decide more of the how than they either have been or you feel comfortable with them doing. Give them the ability to do that. You stay on the what and why, again, not how. Ask for help when writing stories. Ask the team for help when writing stories. Typical things we normally do anyway as a product owner, but rely more on them. Ask for more help from them for writing stories. For customers, actually ask them for help writing stories. Again, something we should be doing anyway, but try to rely on them more. Try to rely on others while you focus more on helping. Actually spend more time doing more helping tasks, more things that a product owner normally wouldn't do, but you are trying to get the team to be more engaged, get others to be more engaged so that you're not as a driving force when you have multiple roles. So that's basic advice. First, don't do it. If you can at all avoid being a product owner and something else, don't. But if you do, then I guess the best advice, again, that I could give is know which role you're playing, find some help, get others to call you on things. So actually get them to say, you know what, as a product owner, you really wouldn't say those things, but as the dev manager, that's why you're acting that way. Okay, well, that's honest feedback, and maybe that is true. Maybe I need to go back and look at that. So don't do it. And to signify that, so in some of the readings, there were some articles and some quotes. A good one by John Quigley is, "We are essentially falling to the same trap into which conventional projects often fail. We water down the mechanisms that drive efficiency and effectiveness." And the other one by Mitch Lacy I really liked was, "There will come a time when the individual has to choose between satisfying the customer and protecting the team. And you have to decide how to do that and which one is going to win." Again, only one can win. So some good articles and some good pieces to look at there. If you are doing both roles, if you're doing both roles successfully or unsuccessfully, please let us know if you have any tips or any tricks. And if you have any feedback or any questions about product ownership, you can contact us on Twitter at DeliberateCast or email the show at DeliberateCast@gmail.com. If you do enjoy the show, share it with a friend. Tell them why you love it. And while you're at it, you can leave us a rating and a review. We're still looking for a co-host. You can submit your auditions online. And if you submit a question for the week, you can win a book from Bob, the Scrum Product Ownership book, and a handmade bookmark from Kim. A couple questions this week I was able to find and see what people are talking about. One from Jonas, who asks, "What triggers splitting a user story? There's a lot of material on the web about how to split a user story, but very little about when, as in under what circumstances you should split a story. Everyone seems to agree that you should split a story too big to fit into a sprint. Splitting the story is then a way to enable quicker feedback and thus reducing risk, which is why you ultimately want to split the story. So what other signs or indications are there that a story should be reduced or split to reduce the risk apart from its estimated size? I can think of a few myself, but would be good to hear your thoughts on it." So a couple of things apart from estimation that I would say we need to split a story. There's some implementation details. So if somebody says, "Hey, we need to build this, this, and then this," then I can say, "Okay, what's a common thread across those? Is there a way we could slice that vertically and build a story on that?" So I would look at, implementation details. I would look at value that we can deliver in a slice. That may be a good way to say, you know what, this is a pretty big feature or epic or story. And we'd like to slice it based on the activities that a user would do or the value that we would gain from having a user doing certain things for stories. Oh, one other thing I would slice is if I could slice it based on priorities. I've had several conversations with people lately where we're talking about, here's the six things I want. But I really want this first one, and I really want, the first three parts of this first one and the first two parts of that one. Then that's something I can work with to say, okay, look, let's split these stories out so you can get your highest priority things first. If they're in the top six features, then we can do, maybe a couple stories with each feature, and then we can deliver that. So that will be the first delivery, and then work on the other ones as well. Works really good when you have fixed date type concepts, which we still run into. Where we're agile in this bucket, but we still need to have a hard date. So how can we hit that hard date? Well, we can hit the hard date by giving you the most important thing that you need for that date. We can't give you everything by that date, but we can give you the most important things that will enable you to make progress and show what you need to show. Then we can keep building the other things as we go. So hope that helps, Jonas. And then Eric asks about reprioritizing sprint items mid-sprint. "I have a question regarding the reprioritization of an item on an active sprint, and there is no one close to me with whom I can bounce this off, so hope there is someone that might be able to shed some light." Good. That's why we're here, Eric. "I recently argued with my division manager, or my so-called product owner, that should a developer find a blocking issue in a user story taking into the sprint, a few days in which was not identified during refinement, that a spike should be logged, get sized, and brought into the sprint as the active item to be worked on. The blocking user story is then moved back to the product backlog, as this item is no longer a sprint objective. The PO argued that the item be left on the sprint backlog, for example, an 8-pointed user story, and the newly added spike, also in 8 points, should be completed also. This inadvertently causes the developer to miss his story by 8 story points. Am I wrong in saying that a blocking issue should be placed back into the product backlog and reprioritized during the next sprint planning based on whatever the outcome of the spike was? Would appreciate any feedback on this issue as it is bugging me immensely. Okay, Eric, good question. I've had this happen a couple times where the team is working on a story that they had groomed and they had planned, but once they start, they learn something that says, we can't finish the story, or we need something else. So effectively, we're blocked. If it's something, it's a technical limitation or a knowledge limitation or something else to say, look, we can't complete the story. We know about it very early. So what do we do? So the first thing I would do is make sure the team is together to make that understanding, to find out if they need a spike, which it sounds like they probably do, or if it's a dependency issue. If it's a dependency issue, then I definitely would pull the story out. If we know that, you know, I'm dealing with an issue right now where the team is trying to deploy boxes and we have to get somebody to press a button, but we're dependent on that person pressing the button. And if they're not being responsive or anything else, or if they're not ready to press that button yet, then we can't finish the story. So why would we continue to try to have that story on our sprint? Definitely something I would pull out in that case. If it's something where the team has learned that, hey, this is bigger than we thought, or we don't know enough, then yeah, I think it does make sense to say, okay, team, do you need a research spike for this? And then what would the time box be for that research spike? I then would take the story out of the sprint or leave it down toward the bottom of the sprint, deprioritize that story while the spike is done. And then once that spike is done, then reevaluate that story, reestimate it if necessary, because you know more about that story now than you did. So maybe it's an 8-point story. Maybe it's a 13-point story. Maybe it's a 3-point story. But I would reprioritize that for the next sprint, or if it's a stretch item for the current sprint, then I would leave it there. But I definitely would not say we can do both this sprint, because we've discovered something, we've learned, which is important and what we want our teams to be doing. And now here's how we're going to react to that. So we're going to have a spike. We'll make a decision once that spike is done on the original story. And yes, it may mean you get it done a sprint later, and that's okay, because that's what's happened. The team has learned, they've discovered, and we've responded. The other thing that I would say is if that story was the focus of the sprint, so if that was the sprint goal or that was the main, you know, the top story, then maybe it makes sense to cancel the sprint, replan, and go again. You can replan with other stories. You can replan with the spike. You can do whatever you want to. But maybe it's a cause for replanning depending on how impactful it is to the users. I've canceled 2 sprints in my product owner's career over 6-plus years, so it's not a common thing. And it's usually technology-based where the team can't complete a story or they learn something that says, whatever we just planned, we're not going to get done. And it's very impactful. So it's rare, but it does happen. So thank you, Eric and Jonas, for the questions. I think they were very good for the show. And if you have any questions, please write in. So a couple other side notes. Look for some new information coming out in the next couple of weeks. I'm working on a project with a couple other folks and trying to get some other things done for the show, new things for the show, new avenues for the show. So hopefully that's good. We did set up a Facebook page just to have a Facebook page. So if you're on Facebook, go like Deliver It Cast. If you want to ask some questions over there, that'd be great too. But we're expanding as we go. So please let us know your thoughts. Let me know what you're interested in, what you like, what you don't like, because this is a show that I like to do for you guys. And now for the disclaimer. These words are my own and are not endorsed or representative of any company or organization. You can find me online at iscardybryan on Twitter or infrequently blogging at don'tyellme.wordpress.com. And that is episode 39 delivered. Go out and own your outcome.